Do you like tea? Do you like happiness? Then you should drink tea. Sherlock Holmes tea. Yes, now. Go to www.adagio.com/Sherlock and get some Sherlock Holmes tea. There's tea for ships too. You can drink Sherlock and John doing the dirty if that's your thing. Or Sherlock and Moriarty. Or Lestrade and Molly. Basically, you can drink a lot of sex. So go do it. All the cool kids are.
Crime in science radio is a super cool thing. What's the good, the bad, and the ugly when Hollywood tackles crime and science? Do they sacrifice science for story? What do they mostly get wrong and right? Join Jan Burke and D.P. Lyle, M.D. and find out. Also, Leslie Klinger is a Holmes expert of the First Order. His The New Annotated Sherlock Holmes is one of the most highly regarded studies of Holmes and his creator, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. What influenced Holmes's scientific and investigative methods? And what influence has Holmes had on forensic science and criminal investigation? Go to www.suspensemagazine.com/crimeandscienceradio.html and listen. Seriously, this is a great show. The Baker Street Journal is kind of the coolest Sherlockian publication out there. Isn't that right, Caffers?
It is. It's been around since 1946 and has had all sorts of intellectual and fun articles. Plus, we've been in it.
Twice.
Hot damn.
I think Lindsay has been it about 5,000 times.
She would.
Not to mention, the Baker Street Journal is one of our sponsors.
I knew they were super cool.
So all of you listening should go to www.bakerstreetjournal.com and subscribe or submit something. You don't have to subscribe to submit.
Also, their Twitter is great. They tweet facts about From the Canon and about Sir Arthur Conan Doyle every day. You can follow them at Baker Street. Well, it's Baker ST Journal.
Go do that, or John Watson will forever be alone, and it'll be your fault.
And you don't want that on your conscience. By the way, Curly, how's the book coming along?
We're getting there. Our publishers, Wessex Press, are eagerly waiting to publish it. For those who don't know, we're publishing a collection of Sherlockian essays written exclusively by the new internet-based fandom. It's really spectacular, actually. The essays are phenomenal.
When will it be out?
BSI Weekend 2014. Wessex Press have been very patient and supportive in all of this. Not to mention, they've always supported the podcast.
So you should all support them and go and pick up some goodies at www.wessexpress.com.
True facts. And if you're in the Maryland area, go to www.scintillation.org and read up on The Scintillation of Scions, which happens every summer. It's a Sherlockian family reunion with merchants and tea and papers. It's a really great time. I've gone and spoken the past 2 years.
Go do that, or John Watson will cry.
And with that, here's part two of Sherlock Holmes After Dark.
Ooh, Sherlock. Oh, they call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street babes always leave the rest of them behind. Oh. So when Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you two one mind?
Do we want to talk about Irene Adler? We had quite a few questions about her.
Yes, and I
including
like
from the whip hand.
Yes, I love her. I love her so much. All right. And then, all right, yeah, so the whip hand asked, did portraying Irene as a dominatrix for hire belittle her character or strengthen it? And I actually have really strong feelings about this, so if I can hijack answering this for a second, I'd be much obliged.
Do it. Go for it. Do it now. Do it.
Okay.
Do it now.
You've got the floor.
I think I speak for a lot of young women in that I don't really feel confident in my sexuality. Like, and I'm sorry, this is TMI, and I really hope my mother isn't listening, but I'm not really experienced, but I've always really, like, admired women who really own their sexuality. So whether it's, like, a la BBC Adler, and they're not afraid to take charge in the bedroom, or if it's, like, as simple as, like, wearing something that makes them feel really sexy, I'm so stupidly self-conscious. So, like, seeing Adler as a sexy, confident woman was really inspiring to me. Like, I was watching it going, holy shit. And that goes for Laura as well. Like, when we talked to her, she was so confident. And, like, what lady crush I already had on her sort of tripled. So I think Irene being a dominatrix in Sherlock was a really great choice because it set Irene apart, but it still paid like homage to like the canonical Adler as a smart, confident woman who was an adventuress. It modernized that aspect, but it kept like the same essence of her character.
I'm sorry, can I just slow clap you for a second? Fucking fantastic. And like, I have so many feelings on this subject too, and I'm still slow clapping. I'm not just on the podcast. Like, look, I grew up in a very conservative setting as well. As I said, like, you know, boobs aren't allowed on the TV. I solved my sexual, like, stunted, repressed nature with porn. So it's like, yeah, it is really neat to see and not to say necessarily that Irene Adler is overtly having sex with her clients, because of all of the sex trades, a dominatrix is probably the least likely to have to engage in actual sex with her clients if she doesn't want to. She's in charge. So since she's in charge, we don't know if she was banging them, she might have just been beating them, whichever, it was awesome. I do respect that so much because, like, I needed to see more of that when I was a kid. I have an admitted problem with Irene Adler now in new adaptations, including the Warner Brothers incarnation. Why does she have to be naked? Like, Irene Adler beat Sherlock Holmes at his own game, and she did it as a woman, and she did it disguised as a dude for a minute, but she also did it without flirting with him. Oh, and that aspect of the original, I mean, she was engaged to be married and then married to the love of her life. And I find it kind of strange that she was necessarily turned into Sherlock Holmes' romantic liaison. So applause on the dominatrix, no applause on that particular ship. Anyone else who wants to ship it, do it.
Because that's been a popular ship for quite a while. And how far back does that, like, actually go? Because I know, like, the Mary Russell books, obviously.
Well, that's canon in the Mary Russell books. I mean, they have a kid together.
Yeah.
They have a son who, yeah.
Yeah, but how far back does Holmes and Adler having a
thing go? Oh, man. I'm gonna text Les.
Yeah. I have a question.
That was my very first Sherlock Holmes ship, was Sherlock and Irene.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When I was a young, jaded teenager reading the Holmes stories, I thought, oh, wouldn't that be nice?
I can totally see the appeal of it, completely.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I will speak as the person who's sort of always been the aggressor in my relationships.
Yeah.
I identified with that version of Irene, and I think I mean, the original in canon in Bohemia, she, to me, was sort of the embodiment of the confident woman. And so being a dominatrix isn't necessarily, or even being, I think there's some question from a lot of people whether or not she was some kind of partner for hire or whatever, that I never thought of it as a question of, is she the kind of woman, it was never about sex, it was, is she the kind of woman who owns her own being, who has self-awareness and strength from that comes from within herself?
Yeah, totally.
And I think it's interesting because this is the random, like, side notes of life. In college, I had a really good friend who was a dominatrix, and that was how she paid for college. She paid cash for college, doing things for men like dressing them up as babies and dripping hot wax on them and stepping on them with stilettos. And I always thought it was like a very comical situation, but, you know, at the end of the day, the thing that she always said to me is, I don't have sex with these people. And I think it's a misconception among a lot of people that dominatrix equals prostitute. And
for sure,
I think that's a really unfair characterization of that profession, not to say, you know, people do what they got to do. But I think if there's one thing we could clear up about it, dominatrix is not a prostitute.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Actually, to add another example to that, I'm currently in art school, and actually, I think one of my teachers mentioned that a previous student of his was a porn star, and that's how she paid for college. You know, and it was like, well, you know, it's like, you gotta pay the bills.
Yeah, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Do what you gotta do. But it's like, just because you're a porn star doesn't actually mean you had sex with people. I mean, I don't know the situation there, but I'm just saying that's what I heard.
I mean, there's, like, the whole, like, you know, sex workers thing. But I think definitely dominatrix, like, they don't have sex. They, like, as you said, they are completely in charge. And if the guy was like, we should have sex, she'd probably, you know, whip him or something, and he'd like it. Yeah. And that'd be end of story.
I think one thing that's kind of interesting to people, and actually was interesting to me, and probably what made me go bonkers over the BBC iteration, was just that there's a real vulnerability to being a very strong woman. Mm-hmm. And this is, of course, me projecting my own issues. But when you're very, very strong and people perceive you as very strong and very independent and very strong-willed, being vulnerable can feel very dangerous. And I think that is part of what made Irene so interesting and so fascinating. Not the fact that she was working as a dominatrix, or that she was sexy, or that she was trying to appeal to some latent sexual urges within Sherlock, but that she was actually, you know, really putting herself out there in a way that made her risk her life. And that is important, I think, just as important as any sort of sexual storyline that was inherent in that.
That's such a good comment, and like, I have explained to a few people previously, and it never makes sense when I try to talk about it, but part of the reason that, I mean, I just also naturally really like pretty dresses, but part of the reason that I'm covered in sparkles everywhere, like, I go in the Sherlockian community, is because they don't look at me anymore. Like, it's kind of a shield. There's a certain dragon scale quality to sequins.
Sure.
And I've never been able to define it very articulately, but it's true. Like, if I walk into a space wearing a ridiculous amount of what I consider to be armor, which are sequins, fewer people accost me with weird questions. And that's always baffled me.
I think it goes back to it. So, interestingly, I was talking to a friend of mine over lunch about, you know, just sort of having what our fashion sense is, and this is sort of strangely related, but I always said to her that my fashion sense is that if somebody sees me, I want them to think that I could kick their ass. And so I stay away from any sort of sparkly anything, really, as a result. But maybe I'm doing it wrong. I don't know.
Apply sparkles.
You're not doing it wrong. You're doing it right for you. It's just this thing where some of the people who've been involved in Sherlockiana for a really long time, I have to say, first of all, 99% of people who have been involved in Sherlockiana for a really long time, in terms of the physical meeting at the Scion Societies and at the Baker Street Irregulars, etc., are perfectly nice, lovely people. But for that tiny bit that isn't, if you walk in as a, you know, lady wearing... I shouldn't give the secret away, should I? Wearing something epilepsy inducing, then you don't quite have to, you know, deal with as many questions as you would otherwise do, because you're under the radar, because you're above the radar. That's super deep, I know. Just absorb it, guys.
It's like you're so far above the radar that you're off the radar.
I'm sorry for even bringing it up, but it is a weird thing that I have done many times, and it works.
I think it does work, because that's, okay, so let's bring it full circle. The reality is the reason that Sherlock Holmes can't read Irene Adler is because he's seeing something he normally doesn't have to measure up, right? And People probably are seeing a person they haven't had to measure up before.
Hmm. I don't
think right or wrong or anything in between, but that would be my interpretation.
Yeah, I would say the same. I can't really measure the effect that it has because, you know, when I wander around in that sort of state, it's just me geeking out about Sherlock Holmes, but I'm geeking out about it and it wearing something outrageous, you know? It's like...
Right.
So that I'm not asked typical questions. But, you know, it's also interesting, and I don't know if anybody wants to talk about this, so I'll just give a very brief... This was not a problem before the Warner Brothers film came out, and I love the Warner Brothers film, and I love BBC Sherlock, and I love Elementary, I love all of them, but what happened was, when I entered the Sherlockian community, I was instantly sort of semi-accepted by most parties, and like so many brilliant, gorgeous parties, because what would you be doing here if you weren't a real Sherlockian? And so it turned into this sort of, after the Warner Brothers films came out, it happened almost instantly. A lot of young ladies enjoy the Jude Law and the Robert and the, you know...
Epic romance.
The babes, all the babes call Game of Shadows a gay of gay, and I don't think we're so. But... It turned into proving a negative, like, in a really weird way for a really brief while, and I don't want to bring up random, like, strange shit, but you can't prove the negative that you're not just a blank fan. You're not just a Downey Jr. fan. You're not just a Cumberbatch fan. You're not just a Asylum Sherlock Holmes fan, which is the greatest adaptation of all time. So... I wasn't under the sort of onus of proving your canonical knowledge, and this is only from, like, seriously, a very small percentage of people, and no one should ever be scared about going to a physical Sherlockian Scion meeting because they're brilliant. But I started to see it happening to my friends, you know, a little bit.
Suddenly there was fake geek girl stuff going on.
Fake geek girl stuff, and it made the, you know what? Lori, that's exactly what it was. It was fake geek girl stuff, and it was Cumberbatch-oriented and Downey Jr.-oriented, and it made me so angry, because I was like, Basil Rathbone wore a fedora, fucker. That's not canon. That's not a thing that happened.
Off topic.
No, I think what you're bringing up is that At its heart, I mean, if we think about how did you fall in love with Sherlock Holmes or how did you fall in love with the stories, there hasn't, for a lot of us, I think probably what's true is that we read the stories when we were young, or we read the stories when we were in high school or college, and then time passes and it fades away, and nothing will draw your attention back to something that you loved. And add a sexy cheekbones like Cumberbatch to nostalgia, and you've got a really great mix intense fandom. And that's what happened to me, and I think that's what happened to a lot of other people. It doesn't change the fact that somebody put a book in my hand 20 years ago and said, read this.
Yeah. Sorry, Chris, that was totally off topic, but it's like, you know, like women are very much involved in the Sherlockian erotica industry.
Yes.
Should I call it an industry?
It's an industry.
Should we get back to that?
I think, like, the overall point that I think you guys were trying to make is that I think a lot of people, when they see young girls saying they're Sherlock Holmes fans, they're like, oh, you're just in it for, like, Cumberbatch and Freeman, and like,
right.
And there's that slash stigma that we're definitely.
But what if you are? Even if you are only
right, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I think just a lot of people, and there was like actually a comment made on our Facebook that someone just said they're just from the older generation, and they think, you know, the idea of slash is vulgar.
Yay, vulgar!
Of course. Is lesbian pornography also vulgar? I hope so.
No, apparently not.
It's widespread.
But there is that stigma. Yeah, and I think I think opening a dialogue about what slash fiction is and just like talking about it, because like I actually just got an email filled with like 10,000 questions. I don't know why they sent it now, but it's like talking about, you know, like the kink meme and like all this kind of stuff. And it's like, I think a lot of people get like really like freaked out because it's so hyper sexualized, and people are like, oh my god, how can you do that? Like, they think we're degrading the characters in a way. And it's like, no, actually not. We're just exploring different facets of relationships and that kind of thing. So I don't know, like, especially, like, you know, Lori and Lindsay and everyone, like, talking about, and I think even Sketch and Reaper, you can comment on this with, like, kink memes and, like, getting requests for, like, writing certain things or, like, all that kind of stuff.
I've always said that entering a fandom is like deep sea diving. And when you first get into it, you stay kind of shallow, and you stay down for a little while, and then you go up again. And the next time you go in, you go further down and further down and further down, and you get acclimatized to every depth that you go. And you could never conceive of going right down to the very bottom on your first trip. So mm-hmm. your first experience reading Flash, you're going to read, you know, something nice, fluffy, maybe a little hurt comfort, something, you know, you don't, and then suddenly 3 months later, you're reading, like, you know, Omegaverse AU vampire fic, and
3 months later, you're reading Tuna Lock, and you're like...
and
I have to admit... Oh, sorry.
It just seems totally, you know, just... But that's part of the experience, and it's not that... Because all Slash is not created equal. Slash comes in different varieties and different flavors, and there's something to suit every taste. If you want to read, you know, Vampire Omegaverse AU, that's great. There's stories out there for you. But if you just want to read, like, fluffy Reichenbach Return fic, there's lots of that for you, too. Yeah. And it's not... And there's also the perception that Slash is, like, 100% about the smut. Which, hey, I love smut. Ha, who doesn't? But it's... Some of my favorite stories have been, like, one-shots that are just, like, PWPs, but some of my other favorite stories are like long, plotty things that have a lot of emotional resonance and plot, and the smut is kind of there for seasoning.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of ways to incorporate the smut, so to speak.
I was just going to
off a tangent there, sorry.
Oh. No. Right. Oh, I guess I was just going to say, like, I always thought that with Sherlock, like, in general, it's almost as if, I'm not the best at articulating this, but I think it's sort of like whatever you might need in like to be happy during like a certain time of day, or just like, you know, it's like, oh well, I feel like some fluff right now, or I feel like some, you know, PWP, whatever. But there's always like something there out there, and I feel like when you watch or like getting into this IP intellectual property to begin with, it's sort of like, yeah, I'm fudging this up really badly. Like, okay, I'm going to back up and say, like, for example, I always thought that with Sherlock and John, it's like, I can relate to them both in different ways. And, this goes back to when I was answering about, like, what, like, I said that Watson is my favorite character, but actually, and actually, I would say that I can't really see them as two separate characters sometimes, because it's like, the way that Watson acts, or the way that Holmes acts, it's like, those are different parts of the brain, per se, or, like, of one person's personality. Okay. So it's like you empathize with what you need to empathize with, or it's like fill in the holes of what you need.
They're two halves of one functioning human being.
Exactly. It's, okay, mm-hmm. yeah, that. So.
Essentially, they're soulmates. That's what it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone would really disagree with that. They'll disagree with, like, the level of soulmate, but I think everyone mm-hmm. agrees that they are, like, without one another, they are, like, completely lost human beings.
John Watson loved Sherlock Holmes, Sherlock Holmes loved John Watson. It's canon. I mean, it's canon. Read yeah. the canon. If you want to look for proof, find it in the canon. Like, you know, like, you don't have to turn it into a sexual relationship, but it's a fact.
So I guess what I'm trying to say is that as a fan, oh, sorry, but as a fan going into it, it's like there's so much possibilities for everything there. So you can find what you need. And I feel like that's especially evident in this, you know, 'cause there's a lot of other fandoms of different things out there, but I feel like it's really strong in Sherlock Holmes. Well, that's my opinion.
You know, like, if I could add, like, it's really interesting, like, the variation, like, the type, like, the whole different types of stories. It's something you don't really, I mean, I haven't read a lot of fiction lately, like, a lot of novels, but it just seems like a lot of themes that you don't really see in mainstream novels and stories. And I love how, like, something will come up, like, Omegaverse, basically, and different authors will offer their different takes on it, and it'll develop into something really interesting that you don't really, you probably wouldn't see anywhere else outside of fandom.
I think that's very true. And just because mm-hmm. there are a lot of people who listen to this who aren't necessarily in the fandom community, do we want to explain some of these terms just so they don't get, they don't Google yes. things and get shocked?
I would like Sketchlog to explain what Omegaverse is.
Oh, really?
It makes me super happy.
Gosh, no, there's so many, because I am really in, like, for me, the thing about, like, AU Fix is just, like, trying to see the world building, and yeah. there's so many different kinds of Omegaverse out there. Just, like,
that was a good deflection,
start
dude.
With that? Okay, I mean, okay, I'll give it a shot, but it might be terrible.
My body is ready.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so basically, from what, because I actually haven't read a lot of fic lately. I've been too busy to do that. So I'm a little... Okay, but from what I remember, it's basically, like, alpha, beta, and omega dynamics, where it's like, the alpha is the strong type, I guess, that...
I can just, like, picture you writhing in your chair, like, why?
I am so happy about this account right now.
I'm just, like, sitting here going, like, what?
Reaper, did you want to help her out just so she doesn't implode?
Do you want help? I don't...
I can stab at it.
Both try to figure this out. Like, how would you actually sum up Omega Fig?
I would sum it up by saying it's an elaborate world-building construct around the concept of Empreg.
Which is...
Yeah.
That's excellent, yeah.
Which is a long-standing trope in fandom around male pregnancy. That has been going on for many, many years. I used to see it in Harry Potter when I wrote and read in the Harry Potter fandom. But it's blossomed into a kind of full societal world-building alternate universe, alternate biology framework into which that concept fits.
There we go.
And sex pollen. Uncontrollable.
Yeah, it has no pollen and, like...
Pheromones.
Yes.
That's a big one.
Pheromones and heat and nodding. Yeah.
It has a lot of, like, mammalistic, like, wolf pack quality kind of stuff to it.
Bonding.
Yeah, it's very animalistic.
So basically, the Omega is usually the baby-making machine, and they'll go into heat, like, depending on what the author dictates the world-building. They'll just go into heat, like, once a year, twice a month, whatever. And then the Alpha will basically just have sex with them a lot when that happens. That's it.
I'm going to listen to this and go, oh my god, what is going on in that slide?
I'm just imagining how many of our listeners just hit stop.
You know, it might be considered crude or distasteful, but...
Some people like it, and you know, that's completely valid. Like, it's not to my taste, but I will admit, and like...
Yes, exactly.
This is actually Reaper's fault. Is that I saw yes. your artwork for Chameleon, I was like, everyone keeps talking about this fic.
Velvet
and it was
in
AU, and I was like, oh, well, I guess I'll read it. And I devoured it. And
but technically, Chameleon is not Omegaverse.
I know, I'm saying, but it's like, it's not, but like, it kind of had those kind of qualities with like the bonding kind of thing.
It was getting there. It was getting there.
It could be a gateway drug to Omegaverse.
There you go. Yeah, so that, dear listeners, is what Omegaverse is. so there you go. And like, in Fluff is like the really like sort of happy stories that, you know, nothing goes wrong. Angst is when everything goes wrong.
Or rather, where everything goes wrong and then it goes worse.
Yes.
Sort of like Game of Thrones.
The angst does tend to resolve itself at a certain point. I mean, it's a firm principle of writing. I mean, you have to have your protagonist suffer endlessly and then suffer more after the endlessly, like, until the end of it, and then your protagonist comes through. I mean, or it doesn't always. I mean, Lori knows about
Lori.
God, what did I do?
You know wrote, what you did.
You know,
you know what you did. Are you speaking of a short story that I wrote that goodness. In which there is sad things happening?
You
wrote, oh my
you
god!
Wrote about water and you can
and being alone,
being alone on it.
Can I just say that I skimmed that and cried. I've only read it, like, technically I've only read it once, and I skimmed it once, and I haven't let myself touch it again.
No, I've only read it.
I still can't even listen to Sorrow.
No.
Oh, God, Sorrow is such a good national song, though! I love the national so hard, and Lori...
It comes on shuffle, and I have to skip it. I just can't.
I'm glad I don't know this song.
You made too much power. I don't deserve this kind of Bengali-like influence.
Yeah, you do, though, because actually, I think, from looking it up earlier, you are either the most kudosed or the most commented BBC Sherlock fic on AO3.
Really? Well, I don't know that... I know that... Or total hits, not Alone in the Water, but performance in a leading role is in the
that's
top.
That's what I'm talking about. So you can definitely speak with some authority on the subject of hurting people's
I only did it that one time. My other fics are all fluffy and stuff.
And for those who don't know, I guess, Lori, did you want to explain what Alone on the Water was very quickly, so then we don't cry?
Sure. Alone in the Water is a short story that I was actually my first fic in the Sherlock fandom. It's a one-shot in which Sherlock discovers he has a terminal inoperable brain tumor and decides to end his own life on his own terms with John's assistance, which he then does.
Yeah.
And it hurts a lot.
It hurts a lot.
Sometimes I go in and look at the Tumblr tag, the Alone in the Water Tumblr tag, and it sort of reads like a collection of crying gifs.
isn't it also kind of used by other, like, Sherlock fans to induct new Sherlock?
Yeah, it's like a rite of passage now.
Yeah.
I have heard tell of this phenomenon. I have no personal experience, but I've been told that that kind of thing goes on. I have no knowledge of these practices.
I did actually do it once.
It has 48,000 approximately hits.
That's intense.
Well That's done. Intense.
You know what my favorite, actually, Mad Lori story is? Yeah, slow clap it out. Is when we went to 221 BCon, Chris, mm-hmm. and her book was there in like the bound.
I bid on that for, like, the DashCon thing, and I didn't win it, and I was very upset.
Oh, God, it was so nice. I mean, Lori, like
I am still completely bowled over by this. I was so amazed. What we're talking about is there's a Tumblr user, Amy, and she does bookbinding for a hobby, and she bound 6 copies of my story performance in a leading role. They were beautiful. I knew she was doing it, but I really didn't know what they would look like. And when she handed one to me, I was speechless. I was so amazed. And there were 2 of them were given away in a raffle auction, and then she gave me one. And she just donated another one to the DashCon auction. So it is just... In fact, I'm looking at it right now. It sits on my coffee table here in my apartment. And it's amazing and wonderful, and I was just totally humbled by the level of care she put into that.
Yeah, the girl who won it at 221BCon was so excited, and I think that really speaks volumes to, like, how important, like, fan fiction is in fandom, and how people take it very seriously and are very excited about it. Like, this girl, who is adorable and dressed as Bilbo, was just, like, so, she was, like, flailing around. It was so great. It was just really great to see.
She was doing a Tuna Lock impression, to be honest.
Why do you keep bringing that up?
So that we talk about it? No, it was so cute. And, like, she, and not cute in, like, a diminutive, infantilizing way, but, like, in a really cool way. She was really enthusiastic about this piece of fiction that has literary value, and she had it in a bound copy in a physical book. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, just really nice to watch that happen.
It was really humbling and flattering for me, and I know that feeling. Just ask me what I acted like when I got the lovely Reaper Sun did some fan art for Performance in a Leading Role.
It is so good!
She sent me a print of it in the mail, and the day I got it, I was like on my back on the carpet, like with my legs in the air, flailing and kicking and making sounds that only dogs could hear. So I know that feeling, and I have that too for art and fiction that is really meaningful to me, and that fandom has been an important part of my life since I was like 20 years old, and I'm primarily a writer, and how I write and read fan fiction is how I enter a fandom. It's through the reading and absorbing the fanfic of others and seeing the fan art and seeing the creativity. The creativity product is really the way that fandom speaks to me.
Reaper, how did you interact with Performance in a Leading Role when you made that art for Lori?
I'd read it before, and then I went back and read it again, and maybe a second time. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure how to answer the question. It's just
Well, answer it however you want, because it's not meant to put you on the spot. Just
no,
I mean,
no.
What do you appreciate about that story?
Well, I mean, I guess anything with like drawing for fanfic is just it's wanting to. It just feels like I want to give something to the author who drew it, and sometimes I'm not sure if all of them really like to see like art of their fics or anything, but it's always nice to hear that they do.
I think we all do. I really think there are any authors who wouldn't like to see fan art, but that's just my impression.
Yeah.
The diagram in my head is really small. It's like a dot.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I guess it's just wanting to, and also wanting to like bring attention. Like, not that fic needed attention at all, but sometimes I'll read some really like nice, like obscure fan fiction and just want more people to read it and enjoy it and also share like something about it that I found really like beautiful or some moment that I really, really loved in it. And yeah, like I think Lori and I like talked about it a little bit beforehand, and like you had an idea of which scene you wanted, right? And we talked about that, and so I think a lot of that was sorry, I lost my train of thought, but like your perspective and then my perspective on it, and just that's, sorry, I have no idea what I'm trying to say now.
No, you didn't use trans at all. You were being very topical. It was just a question about, like, you know, what inspired you about Lori's story that made you want to make art out of it?
Well, we did talk before about it. And so it was, that was kind of the trigger for it. But like, there's just this whole list of like fics too that I would love to do art for. And
oh my god, that was, name them, mm-hmm. Man, dude.
No. I stopped having. I don't know. I like read fic like every day. This is really embarrassing, but I read like new stuff all the time. Yeah,
that's not embarrassing at all.
And
bedtime stories.
Yeah, and I'm just like looking through like for new stuff like all the time, and so I mean I could give you like the longest list ever of things that I would love to draw for, but I think.
Do you have like a top three?
Oh man, no, I couldn't come up with that on the spot. I think like there's a few that I'm reading right now that I'm really into. I guess I don't remember the names of the authors or anything, but Seven Moons.
Oh my god, I love that story.
Lady Flo.
Oh, okay.
That's why Lady Flo dies.
Yeah. I really love that one. I keep wanting to draw art, but I don't want to jinx it.
Yeah.
I keep jinxing these. I don't want to be like, I'm responsible for it, but I feel like I've jinxed like so many stories of like people that just dropped away and never finished them. And
come
but
in.
Anyway, The chameleon!
It's gonna be finished! I don't care what anyone says. I'm still waiting.
It's like part of me almost wishes someone would finish it, like, even if she doesn't come back, but I don't want to be disrespectful, too. Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of people who just drop out for a while, you know?
I hope she comes back. But anyway, performance. I guess there's something about the characters in that are, I don't know how to, like, describe it, but, like, it's still very, like, Sherlock and John, but it's this other version of them that, like, I'm sorry, I've, like, backed myself into a corner here. Like, I feel like there's just all these different versions of them and all these different fics, and they have these completely different, like, characterizations, but they still feel, like, very, there's just something at the core that's, like, always there, and I feel like that was, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the essence of, like, the AU, the alternate universe fic, is that you take the characters from the show, but you put them into completely, you know, alternate universe. So performance is, like, they're actors. And one of my other favorite AUs is A Study in Winning, which I never cared about tennis ever until I read that fic.
Same.
And now I'm like, oh my god, Roger Federer. But, like,
you know, there's a sequel to that one.
Oh, yes, I've read them all. I know her.
just making sure.
I read them all.
She's nice.
Yeah, so, like, for the AUs, I just love AUs a lot, because for me, I don't like to read case fic necessarily, because it's too close to, like, the actual show. Like, I want something completely removed, but still the same characters. Like, just on, like, new bizarre adventures. Whether, you know, they're mermaids or, you know, tennis stars or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Tuna, right, Lindsay?
Sorry?
Or tuna fish.
I am completely okay with tuna. We had a recent conversation on the BSB Tumblr where it was like, you know, everyone's squicked by different things, and there's three of us, basically me, Curly, and Kafers, run the BSB Tumblr. And I thought myself unsquickable. I really did. Like, and then, and all respect to the creators, but baby Octajon came along, and I was like, don't bring babies into Octopus, like, slash whatever it is. Just, it wasn't even the octopus aspect that was fine. Tentacles are fine. I have written, in fact, well.
There's been a surge in tentacle porn lately. I don't know if you guys have.
Yeah.
There's been, like, a renaissance. And
it was the baby aspect I was not okay with. And I was like, don't bring babies into this.
I thought he was supposed to just be, like, chibi, tiny? Like, so small. Like Tiny John.
I know, it was, but I just looked at it and I was like, that's too young. It's not okay. And so it messed with me, and then I was like, nope. She don't be Tuna Lock is fine. That's a tuna fish with a scarf. That's cool.
And a Speedo.
I was so excited when there was a big surge in Ballet Lock a few months ago.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
For the longest time, I have wanted to write an AU, like, So You Think You Can Dance reality show AU, desperately.
That would be amazing.
I have some other things to finish first, but I might actually give it a
performance sequel.
Yeah, you have some things to finish first. I know, I have things.
You have important stuff to do. It's cool.
And speaking of important things, Reaper, I have to mention Red Pants. Because it is your legacy.
Yeah.
And also, as an anecdote, I was there the night at The Game Is On, where, like, pretty much the entire Sherlock cast was on stage in London. And I was sitting behind Amanda Abington. And the question, and as a precursor, Mark Gatiss picked all these questions. So all of this is actually his fault. And he brought up the red pants, which is basically Reaper has created this thing that John Watson wears red underwear. And he started the question, and Martin just stops, like, I know about that. And you're all very shocking. And, like, I just remember, like, dying in my seat, like, immediately going on Twitter. I think it's, like, the most retweeted thing you've ever had of, like, Martin knows about the red pants. And it just went, like, completely insane. Like, I saw it, like, quoted on, like, Tumblr and everything. And, like, everyone else was tweeting about it as well. But just, like, Amanda was in front of me, and she just turned around and, like, gave me this smirk, and I was like, oh my god. So, like, I mean, what do you think
about... You know about... he owns a pair. He has to own a pair.
Oh god.
Oh, Jesus. You
probably
must.
At this point. Because they have, like, you know, hedgehog, like, plushies and stuff, and, like, yeah. Amanda has all these photos, like, saved on her phone. She showed them to us. And, I mean, what do you feel about the fact that your fan art, like, I guess trope at this point is, like, very well known by the cast?
Well, I tried to answer this before, and I, like, just, like, I just can't, it's, I, well, I...
It's hard to comprehend. I completely give you that.
Well, there's, first of all, like, I always say, like, I wish it were something that were more respectable or more something that, like, took actual, like, skill or, you know, it's just this weird pair of underpants that I thought were funny, and then I, like, drew it a bunch of times, and I made other people draw it, and then other people drew it without me paying them, and it,
had
yeah.
Had you had skill in the first place in drawing them, then they wouldn't be a thing right now.
Well, I mean, I guess so, but I guess there's that other part of it, too, that it's so far, like, removed from me that it's, like, it's hard to really be... some part of me is not always overwhelmed by it too, because it's so far, it's not about me anymore. It's about this meme that's kind of outside of me now, mm-hmm. you know? So mm-hmm. it's really exciting and weird to hear about things like that, but it's not usually, oh, this person, Reaper's son's red pants. It's always red pants.
Right.
So,
yeah, that's fair. That's
so
fair.
I'm not connected to it on that level anymore. As maybe
sense.
I was. But it's still really...
One on the water.
Yeah, I was about to say, you both have that thing, like, the fandom has taken ownership mm-hmm. of, like, two of your creations of mm-hmm. Alone in the Water and the Red Pants, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, it's still really exciting and hilarious, but...
You should totally, like, make a button or something that says, I created Red Pants. So
I
people
feel so...
just know when you go places that
people don't believe me. I think I told someone at a convention, like, a lot of people come up at conventions and they'll be like, red pants, and they'll be like, oh, you're Reaper's son, you made red pants. And then occasionally they'll come up and they'll see red pants, and I think on one time I told her, oh yeah, I did that, I made those, and she just gave me this look like I was the biggest bullshitter ever. She just totally didn't believe me, because she didn't know who I was.
Do you know who I am?
I don't want to be that.
Yes! I'm your wife!
It's weird. Like, I get kind of hung up on it sometimes that, like, people should know who I am, you know? And it feels very egotistical, and then I run into people that don't, and it, like, knocks me down again, and I'm like, be realistic, you know?
I feel ya.
To be fair, it's like... you know, Matt Smith going to convention and, like, telling a Doctor Who cosplayer that they had a good cosplay, and then, like, he drives, you know, like, zooms off in the taxi, and the guy's like, wait a minute.
That is a really funny anecdote. Yeah, because, like, they look back, and then all of a sudden you see the cosplayer guy is, like, holding his head going, oh my god!
So, I mean, like, if it happens to people like Matt Smith and plenty of others, you know, like Hugh Jackman, it's fine.
Puts everything in perspective.
Yeah. It's all fine.
Plus, when you're a fan artist or a writer, it's not like people see your face all the time. They just...
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is very true.
How would they even know who you were? I mean, like...
Just by your name badge.
You could just walk around all day being like, I'm abundantly queer! You're like... You're not. Not really.
Yes, because she would probably be walking around too and go, no, you're not, I am.
Then she would take them down by the neck.
Yes.
I'm confident that she would be capable of doing that.
Because AQ is awesome.
Yeah, she's great.
No, but I think that is actually a very interesting thing about, like, not knowing the faces of, like, all these creations. Not the fact that, you know, Reaper Sun came to our party in San Diego and she didn't say hello and I didn't know who she was, so I couldn't go say hello, but I'm not bitter about that at all.
Sorry! I was there for 2 minutes!
I know.
And I missed Moffat, and I was really depressed, so.
Oh. Well, serves you right.
Yeah. I was at the Hannibal panel.
Oh, Whatever.
Oh, I'm gonna cry.
Fandom, Katana.
Fandom. Very tough decisions are made at Comic-Con.
Yeah. I'm just like, I'll just not go. Just, no. won't deal with it at all.
We are approaching 2 hours, so I imagine this will probably be a two-parter.
This will be a tour.
It'll be a tour. Is there anything... I mean, do we want to make recommendations? Because actually a lot of people have asked for...
For Rex?
For Rex. And Les even was like, where do we find this new porn?
Could we... Rex and then Chris, do you feel like it's a good idea to talk about some of the more sort of like, oh, I had a real question about my life that was kind of difficult. Like, do you want to address those?
I mean, the really serious ones about, like, asexuality and stuff?
Well, it's not that serious. It's just what happened to us at 221BCon, to be honest with you. I mean, what happened to me anyway.
Oh, that.
But we should talk about asexuality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we ought.
Yeah.
I mean, like, as long as no one's, like, perishing at the moment.
Nope.
Should we do, like, a fun, invigorating thing where everybody wrecks their favorite shit and then...
End with asexuality?
I might wrecks are so terrible. I mean... So, to give Reaper Sun some credit here, I mean, Red Pants Monday, the tag on Tumblr is obviously, like, the party time. All the time. Not just Monday. Every day is the last one over there. So, that would mean I'm number one. And then I'd also just give Rex to Lori and say, like, go follow Mad Lori on Twitter and see when she's reposting stuff.
Yay!
Go down line. Like, Lindsay, what are your Rex?
Rex, God, that's hard. I always feel like people are going to be angry at me if I actually talk about Rex because I've been published. Like, I don't know if that's true or not, but I don't know. Okay, here is a brilliant, obscure... By the way, I think that fanfiction and pastiche, identical terms, like... That is the same deal, except that, and we've talked about this at length, but pastiche tends to get dollars handed to them. So there's an author by the name of Candle Beck, and it's Candle_Beck, and I'm going to wreck this because it's, like, not fic that anyone reads enough. It's gorgeous Warner Brothers Sherlock Holmes verse slash. And the style is stupid good. So Candle_Beck, like, any of them, they're all painful and, like, so angsty, and I love them. Like, I think that's an author who should... She writes a lot of baseball slash, which I don't understand. Like, real person slash between various major league baseball players, that doesn't fit in my wheelhouse, but I think her vocabulary and her, like, way of painting images is gorgeous. So there you are. Candlebeck.
Sketch.
All right. Okay, this is one that I've been meaning to draw for a long time, but, you know, as y'all know, I'm like, not the most prolific artist, or should I say I'm not good at that at all.
No, you should not say that, because that would be
a lie.
It just, I want to hold too many seals. That's what I... Anyways, I just pulled it up, so I'll link it to you guys, but, the artist, or author is Max Schiffa? I can't pronounce it, but it's M-A-C-H-S-H-E-F-A. And the fic is called Touchstone. And it's sort of a magic AU sort of... I mean, you know, me and my AUs. And it's just... I think I actually got into it because of Podfix, which are great. And it, basically, the universe is about how when people have wishes or emotions, like, colors swirl on their skin, and it actually manifests itself into a physical gemstone of some sort.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of awesome. And that's the one I'm going to wreck. It's just, I love the way that it was written. I really would highly recommend the podfic because it's pretty well read and there's music, and that's nice.
Lori?
I think I might just mention a couple specific things and then in a general way say a really good way to get Rex is to go to your favorite authors or just anybody you know on their AO3 account and look at their bookmarks.
Yeah.
I often tell people, because I get asked for Reckless a lot. Like, I get a lot of asks about recommendations, and I don't keep, like, a discreet Reckless. I do recommend fics on my Tumblr that I have read and liked, and it's usually under either the Fic Rec or Fic Rec tag. I'm kind of inconsistent with which one I use. But if you scroll through that, you'll find them. Also, on the... there's a Tumblr called Fuck Yeah John Locke Fanfic, which is strictly for John Sherlock Flash. And on their front page, there's a link that says favorites. And if you scroll down, you'll find like the top 20 reader favorites, top 20 favorites of the various blog maintainers. And that's a good place to start for that. So, yeah.
Woot. Reva?
I can't come up with anything specific. I just have, like, literally this huge, long list of fics that I could recommend, and I'm looking through it right now, and I'm like, I can't pick anything. But...
Pick the seventh one in the list. What is that one?
No. Okay, so my... I bookmark some weird stuff, so... I don't think I can... that one off. I could send a list, maybe. I don't know. I can't pick them right off the top of my head.
Yeah, no, it's not. We'll list them.
Is there something you're reading right now?
Well, I talked earlier about Seven Moons, and I would wreck that really hard because I'm really into that that story right now. I think about it sometimes, just like I hope it finishes.
I haven't heard about this one. What's it about?
It's Omegaverse.
Ah.
So.
No, it's I read Omegaverse.
Yes, okay.
I do actually read it.
The one that I'm wishing would update right now is one of my all-time favorite stories is Be Here Now by Todis Fuga. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but she started writing a sequel to Be Here Now called Kill Switch, which is 8 chapters, and now it hasn't been updated in about 5 months. Mm-hmm. And she was doing, like, pretty regular updates. So, and I'm also madly in love with Nature and Nurture by Earl Grey T86, which it's Parent Lock, which I am a sucker for. John and Sherlock ended up getting a clone baby of Sherlock.
Oh,
it sounds like a problematic event.
It is so cute, though. It is really in character, and it's really adorable. And then there's the romancy John Locke part, and there's just a million stories that I could talk about that I love, 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 and I'd just be here babbling all night, so I'll stop there.
I could also recommend Darkling I Listen.
Oh my god, and, that one.
And what is the name, the one that the Hannibal AU...
Loss of Flesh and Soul.
Yes, that one!
Yes, that one. I was just gonna pull it up. I was like, should I?
Is that completed yet?
No,
it is in the work, but I
haven't read a word of it. I don't.
Archia is going to finish it. She's not. It's not. I don't think it's going to be one that's going to be suddenly gone. It's just she's busy.
There's always those situations where you're like, oh my god, this is a thing, and then like, wait, it's not a thing. I can't keep getting updates on the thing. It's terrible.
Yeah. So I'm only trying to wreck things that are done. Like, I haven't let myself read Darkling Listen yet because it's not finished. So I've put that one aside.
Hoot. I guess I've definitely talked about mine, but A Study in Winning by Jupiter Ash. Sherlock and John are tennis players. And it just makes me very happy. Obviously, performance and leading role. One that I've just started is a giant series, the Paradox series by Word Strings.
Oh my gosh, yes. Sorry, I have a lot of feels about that one because it's kind of like my gateway into, one of my gateway fics into the fandom.
So yeah, I hear a lot of good things. So
I think that one also has podfics.
Yes, because Maestro Doodles goes on and on about them on Twitter.
Yeah. Just for note, like, if those of us who don't know what podfics are, it's like audiobooks, and they're great because if you don't have time to read, you can just listen to them. Yay. It's the best.
It's audiobooks for fan fiction. So, there you go. It's super awesome.
I'm really excited when she did a podfic of the blog of Eugenia Watson, which is one of my stories, and I'm not a fan of podfic, actually, because I don't like audiobooks, but I listened to that one, and she did such a good job with it. It made me like the story more than what I noticed.
That's awesome.
So sweet.
Am I allowed to wreck another one?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, I just found this one. It's been a while since I've read it, but it's A Study in Blue by Writing is Pretty. And, sending you guys a link. And basically, it's A Study in Pink reimagined in the jazz age.
Oh, I remember hearing about that one.
Yeah, I saw your art for that.
Yes, I'm hugely into that one. And I always have, like, my jazz, you know, playlist on while I read it.
If we're talking about porn and sexuality in Sherlock Beck, you have to mention A Cure for Boredom, which is probably the most famous muddy fic in the fandom. That's my impression. I could be wrong, but...
That is mad smutty. Yeah.
Yeah, it is very smutty, and in an unusual way. And I've known Emma Grant, the author of it, for a long time since she was writing in the Harry Potter fandom, and I was so excited. In fact, I'm proud to say that I helped usher her into the fandom because she, on LiveJournal, she said, "Oh, I'm going to watch BBC Sherlock, should I?" And I was like, yes! And then she said, "Oh, recommend me some sex." I said, "I would be delighted to do that for you." So I feel some proprietary pride about that. But The Cure for Boredom is brilliant.
Delightful.
Does anyone, feel a, direct need to talk about the other question we got?
Before that, I just wanted to say the two that I wreck aren't actually sexy. They're just good.
Oh.
Sorry. That was misleading.
That was really nice.
But if you do want one that's sexy...
That's an interesting comment, actually, because it sort of leads into something I think would be a good thing to talk about, which is the role of smut or porny scenes in fanfiction, because I feel like a lot of people who don't read or write fanfiction believe that all of it is just not wall-to-wall smut, and it's just all porn, and that really isn't true. And I get questions sometimes about writing porn and the role of porn scenes or sex scenes in a fic. And I always say that when you're writing a fic, especially whether it's a long fic or a short fic, your sex scenes should always serve a purpose, and that your sex scenes can actually do a lot of heavy lifting for you in terms of character development or relationship development. They can really serve to illustrate things that you want to convey about your characters or their relationship or the situation that they're in. So, I love a good, plot, porn without plot as much as the next person. But I hope people know that there is that if you want it, but not all fan fiction, and certainly not all Splash, is just all about the porn. Although I love porn.
That's actually a great segue into the fic that I wanted to wreck that is sexy. sorry. And it's I don't know if you guys heard of this one, but it's called A Thorough Examination, and it's got a part two called In Depth. And it's by... Imonger? I can never read pronounce the author's names, but it is very much like it's kind of a dark fic, like where John is just dark John, I guess. And I mean, there's a lot of sexy things, but I kind of read the whole thing as a character study. That's kind of what kept me coming back to this one.
It's like there's a certain amount of depth to the relationship that you would like to further explore through sex, as opposed to sex being the point.
Yeah.
Like, you're talking about two people who already care about each other, and then adding sex as, sprinkles.
And maybe in a PWP.
Sexy sprinkles.
Exactly. Maybe in a PWP, all you're eating is sprinkles. And maybe they're all, you know, green sprinkles, and that's great. But most of the time, I think that people want to further, you know, explore or expand the relationship. And that's why that's happening.
So what was the second question you wanted to talk about, Lindsay?
Oh, well, there was a weird question. It wasn't a weird question. It was actually a perfectly, a regular question initially, and then it turned a bit weird, about why do Sherlock Holmes and John Watson slashers feel the need to create a sexual relationship between the two characters when, in fact, Sherlock could have been asexual, John could have been straight. Is there a specific female urge to slash things? And I said, you watch lesbian porn, so, you know, whatever, it's pretty. But we talked about this, and the asexual aspect of it, I think, is actually something we haven't really covered. Because you cannot take the character Sherlock Holmes and immediately identify him with a particular sexuality because he doesn't have one. We don't have any information on the subject. So it's interesting to watch what people do with it, and it's also interesting to watch how people object to it, and it's also interesting to watch how people like it when people do any number of things with his, you know, sexual orientation.
I just say, whenever anybody brings that topic up and includes the phrase, feel the need, the hair in the back of my neck stands up.
Mm-hmm.
Just because when someone asks, why do you feel the need to do this? There is no answer to that question. Why does anyone feel the need for anything?
Do you feel the need to eat cheese? Because cheese is
because
delicious.
Cheese is freaking delicious. That's right.
That's what...
I feel like sometimes the answer to a question is simply just because someone likes it regardless. It's like I would say the equation is like to food. It's like, do you know why you might not like the taste of, you know, like, I don't like green peppers. I just don't. Is there a reason why? I just don't.
Yeah. The rest.
I love,
yeah.
You know, it's something like that. It's like, can you explain it? No, not really.
Yeah. And I think it also needs to be said that even if a character or a person is asexual, that doesn't mean they can't enjoy sex. Like, that's
yes,
not like
you.
they don't actually have sex. Sometimes they may not feel the need, but they may.
Yeah.
So, and, like, I'm far from the person to ever, like, do any sort of psychoanalysis on asexuality. I have no idea. I have no, like, way that I could ever comment on that. But that's just the sort of, like, people see what they want to see in a relationship, and there's no right or wrong way to see it.
But one of the coolest things about the BBC Sherlock fandom and the general, you know, Sherlock Holmes fandom specifically, is that you can be attracted to someone you're very close to. You can be not attracted to anybody. You can be attracted to someone who you randomly met and is a heterosexual pairing. You can be, you know, it's a complete tabula rasa. And that's a nice thing about the Sherlock Holmes fandom, because we have absolutely no information. So, you know, anyone who is trying to sail their ships with cannons loaded at other people's ships is unfortunate. Because you just have to, you know, you sail your ship and you do it the way you like it, and then everyone else is perfectly fine with their own armada.
Mandarin sometimes says that shipping is not a zero-sum game, where if I ship one thing, it's not like there's a finite amount of shipping currency, and that if I take some for my ship, that leaves less for your ship.
Right.
That's
yeah.
Not what it is. Everybody can ship what they want and see in the relationship what they would like to see, or even, you know, they may think there's canon evidence for it, they may not, they might just be in a total flight of fancy, and that's all good.
Does anyone think there's a specific canonical reason for, you know, the most popular pairings?
I think it just goes back to what we were talking at the very beginning about the closeness of Holmes and Watson and their friendship and how we perceive it in modern day context.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there you go. Mic drop. Boom.
And he's fully forced.
Unless you have two characters that you really like and you think are hot and you would like to see them do naughty things together. For purely current reasons.
Man, Lori is turning it all back and asking us questions and shit.
Well, that wasn't meant to be a question, actually. That was,
it was more of a rhetorical statement.
It was more of,
Never mind. Leave it be.
I can turn it back on you if you want, though. Bam!
I thought that went up at the end, you know.
Oh.
Well, I mean, like, and we didn't mention this, so I feel like a slight riot may happen. That, you know, the people who ship, like, Maestrat and stuff, Mycroft and Lestrade.
I don't get it. Oh my god, I don't get it. Never talk!
Well, I
don't either, but I don't have to get it. You know, the people who get it, and nobody else has.
Yeah.
I think they're the only reference of them being in any sort of contact was in Hounds of Baskerville, when Lestrade was like, I don't do everything your brother tells me. Mm-hmm. Which I know made everyone that ships Maestrade very happy.
Oh, yay!
So, like, and it's like the whole thing, like, a lot of people ship that. People are, there's a growing contingent of people who ship John and Lestrade. Irene and Molly is popular.
Mm-hmm.
You can totally get on board with that.
It's cute.
It's like a bag of Skittles, you know, taste the rainbow, everyone can get together.
Like, taste the rainbow if all the Skittles had sails and they were ships.
There you go. Skittle ships.
Skittle.
If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you two to one?